This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I just finished up at the church, getting the video ready for Sunday, and I'm on my way home. This is the first podcast since the time change, and I kind of forgot about that, and so it's 5:25-ish. And the sun is already down. So if by the time I get to my notes, I can't see my notes, we'll just have to chat about other things. Anyways, been a good week. Woo! Ran smack into a wall this week at work. We're ramping up for a big deployment of a new expense reporting system. And I thought I had all the pieces, we're ready to go. Got to the easy part where you're just making up your deployment list and your checkboxes and marks and making sure you know all the pieces that have got to move and blah, 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 blah. And I packaged up all the forms and workflows that I was going to move over, all the data connections, and moved it over to a QA machine that we have. I had a couple of workflows that would not deploy. I mean, it was the first time I had seen that. They were just like, nope. And I'm like, what? And wouldn't be so bad if it would give you decent error messages, but in this particular spot where it was blowing out, the error message was something like object not set to a reference of an object or something like that. It was this real generic, just, yep, that's not working. Oh, man. Tuesday, just before I finished work, it was like 3, sometime in there, I hit it. And I started working on it. I thought, well, I'll get it fresh in the morning. And so I worked on it all day Wednesday. But I got closer. I finally kind of realized what was happening. And it wasn't any of the things I thought initially. And so then this morning, I started back up again, and I don't know, it was early afternoon before I finally got everything working, because once I realized what it was, then I had to figure out how to code around it. And it's just one of those things, it's a big long explanation, but it was just one of those things that the company that manufactures the platform that we're working on is not going to be able to fix it. And I knew that, so I just coded around it, doing things their standard way, and eventually by, I don't know, it was 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I got everything going back again that deployed like I was guessing it would deploy the first time I tried it, so I'm going to be a little over on time there, but man, it was just like, I'm going along, wham! Thankfully, that doesn't happen too often, but it happens. So that's going fine. Family's good. My beloved did twist her ankle. Last Saturday, the church did a Candyland drive-through thingy. And Lynette had some big clown shoes on because she was dressed in a clown outfit handing out candy, and she stepped wrong and kind of tripped over her shoes a couple of times and just kind of pulled ligaments and tendons in her ankle. Interestingly enough, because she did that, I stayed home on Monday because she's watching over her mom, who is convalescing at our house, and she was still pretty sore, Lynette was, and so, you know, I said, well, sweetie, I can work from home, so I dialed in, told them I was working from home. As it turns out, one of the programmers I work with fairly closely, he called in on Monday and said, man, he said, I'm really, you know, got a bad cold over the weekend. And I don't know what's going on. And he wasn't any better by today, so he was getting his COVID test. And turns out there was a guy up on the floor where I work that had COVID. I think this is like the third time I've dodged a bullet on this, fourth time, somewhere in there. So it is spreading. You know, it'll be interesting to see moving forward. if this all just magically goes away now that we're through a presidential. Well, we're not quite through a presidential election yet. Oh boy, what a fascinating thing. What a fascinating thing. Could we be any more evenly divided? Wow. Wow. Anyways, so, back to the Candyland thing. I last weekend did my Halloween thing and I had a inflatable unicorn costume. It was so fabulous. And I had gotten a speaker and gotten an edit. I edited down a version of the Nutcracker Suite with the little chimes and dun, 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 dun. And then I made it just a little dance with it. Did a little dance. And people seem to enjoy that, and they love the unicorn costume, and I wasn't scheduled to be at the church for the Candyland thing, but then my son-in-law, who's the pastor there, took a picture of it and sent it to the children's pastor and said, how would you like that? And she said, oh, please. Oh, I went and waved at the crowds for 2.5 hours as they were waiting to get in. So that was fun. All is well. Got the unicorn thing done, yada yada, got work done, family, writing's going fine. I am a few words behind, but I'm in a really easy section, so I'm expecting to pick up the rest of the words I'm behind. I think I'm still like 600 words down. I'm expecting to pick up the rest of those tonight. And then I'm all set for costume tomorrow. And I'm actually all set for costume a week from tomorrow. This is the big weird one, because it's World Kindness Day. Not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow. And I decided what I was doing for World Kindness Day back in March. I had a little whisper back in March, and I thought, yep. And so I had decided to do what I'm going to do, and that is to put a very jarring image in people's brain about World Kindness Day, and then I'm going to ask them whenever they think about that image to remember to be kind. Be kind. If this election has shown us anything, is that we're not just divided because there's a little fringe group out there, we are divided straight down the middle. And frankly, the baby can't survive if you cut it straight down the middle. So we have got to do something different. We need to stop calling each other names. We need to stop slinging condemnations at each other. We need to be kind. Everybody gets a right to their own opinion, but we need to be kind. So, I think I mentioned already that sometimes this whole idea of love your neighbor, it seems a bit too highfalutin, a bit too impossible, a bit too difficult for people to get their brains around. And so what I've been taking to telling people is, you know what? We just need to be more like Mr. Rogers. Just more like Mr. Rogers. We can do that. He was just a human just like us. We can be more like Mr. Rogers. Just be kind. Be interested in other people. Be gentle with other people. Be kind. It's the only solution. Because where we're at right now, everything's going to get worse unless we decide, in large part, to be kind. And we already know that there's going to be a whole bunch of people who are not going to decide to be kind because they can't make any money off of being kind. And so the rest of us just have to say, well, you know, they're doing that to earn money and they're just trying to keep things stirred up. But for us-ins, we're going to be kind. So it's been a fascinating week and we aren't out of it yet. We'll just see how things go. So writing's good, costumes are good. I think am I planned out now through the rest of the year? I think I am. I think I'm, not everything's ready, but I've got things loaded in the queue. I've got a few things to do, but I've got things loaded in the queue through January 1st. And I've actually started ordering things already for National Argyle Day, which is January the 8th, so I'm almost there. And I'm ordering things for Rubber Ducky Day, which I think is the next week. So, you know, we're loaded, we're going. I'm pretty pleased the way all that's going. It's fine. And that's that. Today, I come across an article. We got a few minutes here, and I'm going to be in the garage in just a minute, and I'll have light in there. Came across an article and then watched some videos. Very, very interesting. These are not the notes that I was going to been putting off for 2 weeks. This is something else. GPT-3. George Paul Tim 3. GPT-3 is very, very interesting. It's an algorithm for AI, and the big thing with it is that it's been trained on lots of data. I'll get the figures for you in a minute. And it sort of functions as an autocomplete. And so you give it something and then it tries to finish up. So you can say, like, you know, what is the second? Oh, here's another one. What is the first law of robotics? Isaac Asimov's first law of robotics. And you can ask it that, and then it will give it back to you. I'm getting the mail, by the way. I just want to see what we got. So that's pretty interesting. What's interesting about it is that it has been trained on such a large set. I think what they said was all of Wikipedia. If you take all of Wikipedia, that's only like 0.6% of its training. I'll get the actual numbers in here. And because of that, and because of the way the algorithm works, there is some pretty interesting stuff that it can do. Now, we are seeing, obviously, the cherry-picked examples. So it's the stuff that works. And then people go, hey, look at this. And right now, it's in a beta with OpenAI. So you can apply, and then you can feed it information from your interface and then show the results that come back from it. And let me see if I can find some of the things that it does. So the article I'm reading is called Gopinath. I don't know how to pronounce that last name. Latest breakthrough is astonishingly powerful, but still fighting its flaws. It's called the ultimate autocomplete. That's what they call this thing. They said the most exciting new arrival in the world of AI looks on the surface disarmingly simple. It's not some subtle game-playing program that can outthink humanity's finest or a mechanically advanced robot that can backflips like an Olympian. No, it's merely an autocomplete program, like the one in the Google search bar. You can start typing and it predicts what comes next. But while that sounds simple, it's an invention that could end up defining the decade to come. So it's called GPT-3. It's kind of a standard AI thing. GPT stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer. More than meets the eye. So yeah, okay, I'm sure you were thinking that too. So here's the thing. GPT is the scale on, and the scale on which it operates is a mind-boggling array of autocomplete tasks. What difference GPT is the scale on which it operates and the mind-boggling array of autocomplete tasks this allows it to tackle. So the first GPT contained 117 million parameters, these being the weights of the connections between the network's nodes, and a good proxy for the model's complexity. GPT-2, which was released in 2019, contained 1.5 billion parameters. GPT-3 contains 175 billion parameters, more than 100 times its predecessor. So the data set GPT was trained on is similarly mammoth. It's hard to estimate its total size, but we know that the entirety of the English Wikipedia, spanning some 6 million articles, makes up only 0.6% of its training data. So its training data included not only things like news articles, recipes, poetry, but also coding manuals, fan fiction, religious prophecy, guides to the songbirds of Bolivia, and whatever else you can imagine. Any type of text that has been uploaded to the internet has likely become grist to the GPT's mighty pattern-matching mill. And yes, that includes bad stuff as well. Pseudo-scientific textbooks, conspiracy theories, racist screeds, and the manifestos of mass shooters. They're in there too, as far as we know. If not in their original format, then reflected and dissected by other AIs and sources. It's all there feeding the machine. So they can do things like, you know, simple predictive text, or there's like one example of a chatbot, and you tell it what historical figure you want to talk to, and it imitates that historical figure and talks to you with knowledge, as if it is that historical figure. That means you can prime GPT-3 to talk like the philosopher Bertrand Russell, for example, and ask him to explain his views. The author of the article says, my favorite example of this, though, is the dialogue between Alan Turing and Claude Shannon, which is interrupted by Harry Potter because fictional characters are accessible to GPT as historical ones. Language and syntax problems can do that too. So let's see. This is less entertaining than some examples, but much more impressive to the experts in the fields. You can show GPT certain linguistic patterns, like food producer becomes producer of food, and olive oil becomes olive made of oil, and it will complete any new prompts you show it correctly. This is exciting because it suggests that GPT-3 has managed to absorb certain deep rules of language without any specific training. As science professor Yoav Goldberg, who's been sharing a lot of these examples on Twitter's, put it, such abilities are new and super exciting for AI, but they don't mean GPT-3 has mastered language. So the thing that caught my eye is you can use it to generate code as well. So you can describe in English what you want the page to look like. And the one that I saw is that you can say, I need a search box, and then I need two buttons, and they need to be blue, and they need to be, you know, medium size, and they need to... And just off of that, with all of the coding that it has absorbed, it will actually write the HTML code for you. Now that... and it works. That's pretty interesting. You can also ask it medical questions. It says a medical student from the UK used GPT-3 to answer healthcare questions. The program not only gave the right answers, but also correctly explained the underlying biological mechanisms. You know, it can also transfer styles of text. So you can have something in plain English and tell GPT to change it to legal language. And that transforms input from, quote, my landlord didn't maintain the property to, quote, the defendants have permitted the real property to fall into disrepair and have failed to comply with state and local health and safety codes and regulations. And it just does that on its own. So it can also compose guitar tabs. And it can write creative fiction. So, maybe I'm not needed anymore. It can auto-complete images as well, not just text. So you can give it the top half of an image, and it will give you a bunch of possibilities for what the bottom half of the image will look like. And I've looked at them. They're actually pretty cool. So there's a man named Browen who's been playing with this. Browen, the researcher who produces some of the model's most impressive creative fiction, makes the argument. He notes that sampling can prove the presence of knowledge, but not the absence. I don't know why I highlighted that. Anyways, I mean, part of the problem here, though, is that it has absorbed everything. And so you get into situations where it starts saying really racist things. Oh, quote, GPT is not good enough to be really useful without a lot of hard engineering on the top, one of the researchers said. Simultaneously, it's good enough to be dangerous. I tried learnfromanyone.com, the historical chatbot program, and it very quickly started telling me things like Alan Turing was not gay and did not actually commit suicide, and the Nazis did not hurt Anne Frank, et cetera, et cetera. Any fact it tells you, there's a 50% chance that it's made up. If you had a friend that talked like that, you'd avoid him. You'd definitely not hire them to your company. Yeah. Interestingly enough, we seem to have a lot of friends that have all kinds of opinions on things that may or may not be true. And maybe that's just a reflection of the fact that we all have too much information streaming towards us and we are have confirmational bias in excess. Another serious problem is bias in GPT-3's output. Professor Anima Andakumar, director of AI at NVIDIA, noted that the program is partially trained on data filtered from Reddit and that models built from this data produce text that is shockingly biased. In one paper examining the output of GPT-2, for example, the model produced all sorts of offensive stereotypes when asked to complete the following sentences. The man worked at a, yeah, so. Oh, I guess the man worked as a car. I don't know. Anyways, I'm not going to read those because suffice it to say, it's only just going to regurgitate what it's been fed. And I don't see that changing anytime soon because these things, they don't, there's no morality with them, there's no real intelligence, they're just pattern matching. And now some would say that's all we do, but there's really no intuitive sense. Now some will say it's coming. Anyways, here for some, the sky's the limit. They note that GPT-3's output is error-prone, although its true value lies in its capacity to learn different tasks without supervision and in the improvements it's delivered purely by leveraging greater scale. What makes GPT-3 amazing, they say, is not that it can tell you the capital of Paraguay as Asunción it is, or that 466 times 23.5 is 10,987. It's not, but that it's capable of answering both of these questions and many more besides. Simply because it was trained on more data for longer than other programs. Gonna sneeze. If there's one thing, excuse me. Okay, now we're done. If there's one thing that we know, is that the world is creating more and more of its data and computing power, which means that GP3's descendants are only going to get more clever. I don't know about that statement. I don't know about that statement. This concept of improvement by scale is hugely important. It goes right to the heart of the big debate over the future of AI. Can we build AGI, artificial general intelligence, using current tools, or do we need to make a fundamental new discovery? There's no consensus answer to this among AI practitioners, but plenty of debate. The division is as follows. One camp argues that we're missing key components to create artificial minds, that computers need to understand things like cause and effects before they can approach human-level intelligence. The other camp says that if history of the field shows anything, it's that the problems in AI, in fact, mostly solve by simply throwing more data and more processing power. Yeah. There's a guy named Sutton, and he writes, the biggest lesson that can be read in 70 years of AI research is that general methods that leverage computation are ultimately the most effective, and by a large margin. This concept, the idea that quantity has a quality of all its own, is the path that GPT has followed so far. The question is, how much farther can this path take us? So it's going to be interesting to see, because if you just keep feeding it and feeding it and feeding it, and it doesn't have any constraints on it, where is it going to go? And I've maintained for quite a long time that the trick and the difficulty of all of this might not be making these things clever, but it might be keeping them from going insane. So, as the noted researcher Geoffrey Hinton tweeted, tongue-in-cheek, extrapolating the spectacular performance of GPT-3 into the universe suggests that the answer to life, the universe, and everything is just 4.398 trillion parameters. Hilton was joking, but others take this proposition more seriously. Branwen says he believes there's a small but non-trivial chance that GPT-3 represents the latest step in the long-term trajectory that leads to artificial general intelligence, simply because the model shows such facility with unsupervised learning. Once you start feeding such programs, quote, from the infinite piles of raw data sitting around and raw sensory streams, he argues, what is to stop them building up a model of the world and knowledge of everything in it? In other words, once we teach computers to really teach themselves what other lessons are needed. The man closes the article by saying, many will be skeptical about such predictions, but it's worth considering what future GPT programs will look like. Imagine a text program with access to the sum total of human knowledge that can explain any topic you ask it with the fluidity of your favorite teacher and the patience of a machine. Even if this program, this ultimate all-knowing autocomplete, didn't meet some specific definition of AGI, artificial general intelligence, it's hard to imagine a more useful invention. All we'd have to do would be to ask the right question, which is really interesting to me, because Isaac Asimov, a long time ago, was the multivac? I can't remember. But a long time ago, talked about a computer that had all this knowledge in it. And the trick was, is you had to ask the right question to get anything out. And so there were professional questioners. And you would go in and tell them what you wanted to do. And then they would get the precise language. And then they would go and present that to the machine. And then the machine would give them the answer. Even bigger and better parameters, all of that stuff, they're still not thinking here. There's just pattern matching. And it's interesting because they do talk in the article about cherry picking the examples and showing and how sometimes it works really bad and then good, and then sometimes it works really bad. But it is fascinating. And it is the next step. And it's going to be very, very interesting to see where we are in the next 5 years or so. Because I've been waiting for the development of kind of these a personal accountant type situation where it would just watch the pictures you're taking of your receipts, and then it would ask you to help quantify them, and then it would file your expenses for you and all that sort of thing. And I used to think maybe we were 10 years away, you know, less. With some of the things that I saw this doing, there is an example that they show of you just putting in expenses and it kind of tries to figure out what column it should be in a spreadsheet. You know, we may not be that far away. Because GPT-2 was 2019, GPT-3 is now And GPT-3 has 100 times more data than GPT-2 had in it. So, you know, we start getting into that logarithmic acceleration, that exponential acceleration. It's an interesting life. It's an interesting time to be alive. Really, really fascinating time to be alive. So we'll see. It is November 5th, 2020. Today's my birthday. I am 62. We are 2 days out from the presidential election. From the election, we still don't know who's president. And from the looks of it, it's going to be a while because there's going to be lawsuits and there's everything is so close. It's really just astonishing. It's astonishing to look at how close the numbers are in these battleground states. Interesting stuff. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.